My name is Varanya Chaubey. I'm speaking with Professor Chaliga, who is Commissioner of the National Election Commission at Tanzania. Today is November 20th, 2008. Professor Chaliga, I want to thank you for participating in this interview.
You're most welcome.
I'd like to begin by asking you a little bit about your background. Would you describe the positions you hold now?
Currently, I teach full-time at the University of Dar es Salaam. I teach local government administration and human resource management. But I'm also a part-time commissioner, National Electoral Commission of Tanzania.
Would you tell me a little bit about how you got involved in your work in the Election Commission?
It's a long story, but I was once asked to participate. First, I used to monitor elections from the University of Dar es Salaam, the Department of Political Science and Public Administration in which I work has been involved in monitoring elections since the 1960s. So, in other words, since the university was started. But, so I was monitoring elections also, grassroots, councillor elections, and by-elections. And then one day I got a call from the chairman of the National Electoral Commission inviting me to join them. And he said it's one of those civic responsibilities. So I accepted.
I'd now like to talk about management bodies and about the key players involved in managing elections in Tanzania. We'll get into more detail later, but would you first briefly describe the key players involved in managing elections on the mainland as well as in Zanzibar?
Okay, on the mainland, generally, the national elections, that is the President of the United Republic of Tanzania, the members of parliament for the National Assembly, and also councillor elections. Those are managed by the National Electoral Commission. And in the case of Zanzibar, the President of Zanzibar and the members of House of Representatives in Zanzibar and the councillors in Zanzibar, those elections are managed by the Zanzibar Electoral Commissions.
Would you describe the structure of the National Electoral Commission here? How many members does it have? How are they chosen? And who has the power to appoint and dismiss?
The members of the National Electoral Commission are seven. A chairman who must be a judge of the High Court or of the Court of Appeal, or someone, a legal person who has worked in the legal system for an attorney not less than 17 years. So that can be a chairman. If the Constitution says also that if the chairman of the National Electoral Commission comes from the mainland, as it is the case now, we have a retired judge who is now of the High Court, who is of the Court of Appeal, who is now the chairman. The vice president, the vice chairman comes from Zanzibar because that's the constitution. And then he is assisted by five other commissioners. So in total, the commission have seven commissioners, including the chairman and the vice chairman. And the commission has one major person hired by the commission, and that is the director of elections, appointed by the president on recommendation of the National Electoral Commission, that's by the commissioners. The rest are staff that are either hired by the secretariat under the director of elections. And the director of elections, I may also add that the director of election serves as the secretary to the commission with no powers to vote. Because if decisions have to sometimes, if we cannot arrive at a consensus, then we may have to vote. So the director of elections does not have voting powers. In other words, he only serves purely as a secretary to the commission. And then So at the headquarters, at the headquarter, you have full-time secretariat under the director of elections. But close or during elections, including during the registration time, then temporary staff are hired. These are the registration clerks, but also the registration officers, registration clerks, and the other temporary personnel. During actual elections, then the commission also hires the presiding officers, polling assistants, and the regional election coordinators, REC. So this is generally the setup, but the commission does not have full-time employees up to the council level, where by law, you know, that is by virtue of their office, the people in the councils, that is council directors, whether city director, municipal director, or council director, these are by virtue of their offices, registration, registration officers, or presiding officers. So this is how the setup is, but only during the election time.
Would you also describe the responsibilities of the NEC today?
Today?
What they are?
Yes, I can. The constitution is very clear, and unfortunately at the moment the commission has just finished a draft of the law to establish the commission, because it has been operating only on the constitution. And the constitution has given a number of mandates to the commission. One of them is to register voters, to create a permanent national voters register, which was first established in 2004 towards 2005 presidential elections. So that's one of the responsibilities. Another responsibility is to demarcate constituencies. That is what the constitution says. And to conduct presidential, parliamentary, and councillor elections on the mainland for the councillors. But for the presidential, that's the national, United Republic of Tanzania president, members of parliament, for the Union Parliament in Dodoma, the National Electoral Commission is by the constitution given and the Election Act number 1 of 1985 is supposed to conduct those elections. For the councillor elections, the constitution says it's only for the mainland, because the council elections in Zanzibar are carried out, the elections they are managed by the Zanzibar Electoral Commission. Now, according to Section 12A of the Constitution and the Election Act, the Zanzibar Electoral Commission has mandated to organize Zanzibar elections, but they also carry out the registration, Section 12A of the Election Act. We have to liaise with them. The Constitution requires us to work very closely with the Zanzibar Electoral Commission. But the Commission also registers people in Zanzibar who are eligible to vote for the Union President, but because of the requirements in Zanzibar that one has to stay for 3 consecutive years in Zanzibar to be able to vote for the Zanzibar Member of Parliament or the Zanzibar President, then people who are visiting Zanzibar or who are temporarily transferred to Zanzibar, even on duty or on business, cannot vote for the Zanzibar elections, but they are still eligible to vote for the Union President. So we register those people. and include them in the National Permanent Voters Register. So that is how we operate. But according to the Constitution, the National Electoral Commission is also responsible for carrying out voter education, not civic education, but voter education. That's the mandate at the moment.
You mentioned when people are living in Zanzibar but have lived less than 3 years.
Yes.
The NEC has the responsibility to
register them for the union elections.
So how do you go about doing that?
How we go about doing that, we go to Zanzibar. We have mandate to do so. And then we hire people. That's we hire our own registration clerks, just like we hire our own returning officers during actual elections. So actually, in Zanzibar, during the presidential elections, they cast at least I think 5 of us. But they also have the same room, or in 2 adjacent rooms, 2 electoral commissions managing 2 different elections. So we actually go to Zanzibar to register voters, those who cannot vote in Zanzibar for the Zanzibar elections, but who are eligible to vote for the union presidential election. Because the union president, according to the law, the constitution, Zanzibar is also part of his jurisdiction.
What are the particular challenges you face in going to Zanzibar and working side by side with the ZEC or on your own registering people?
No, well, the challenges are that the people of Zanzibar would like the commission, the National Electoral Commission, to register all the voters. But that's not what the constitution says. That's not what the Election Act, at least the Election Act that we use, number 1 of 1985, that's not what it says. So that's the part of the challenge. But because we work very closely with the ZEC, the Constitution says we have to liaise very closely with ZEC. So we meet frequently to exchange notes and to also agree on the modalities. So those are the challenges, and that's how they are met, by working closely with the Zanzibar Electoral Commission.
I'd also like to ask about changes in the NEC or the ZEC. Is the structure of the NEC different from what it used to be? And if there have been any changes, would you describe how they are different? If it's a change.
Zanzibar, you mean Zanzibar and ZEC? Zanzibar Electoral Commission and the National Electoral Commission, yes, they are different. We started the same in that we started, most of us are civil servants. That's how we would like to remain, as civil servants, non-partisan. In the case of Zanzibar, because of the problems that resulted in negotiations, Mwafaka 1, Mwafaka 2, they had to reconstitute the Zanzibar Electoral Commission by including members of political parties. So their commission, that's the ZEC, includes members, I think 2 members from CCM and 2 members from CUF. And then the rest are supposed to be civil servants, people with no party affiliation. Whether that is the case, Zanzibar is a small place, I'm not sure. But that is how it's supposed to be. Now, that changed before the 2005 elections. Now, in the mainland, that's the Union, the National Electoral Commission, it has only personalities, some personalities have changed. But it has remained the same non-partisan, composed mainly of either civil servants or people who have retired. The chairman, for example, so it is non-partisan, and that's what the constitution says, because the constitution clearly says that people who are leaders in their political parties cannot join the National Electoral Commission. And that, so politicians, that includes members of parliament, includes councillors, members of parliament, ministers. Those cannot sit in the commission. And so the appointment is still by the president, not in his capacity as the leader of a political party, but in his capacity as the executive branch leader. So, and that is very clear in the mandate. And towards the 1995 election, actually 1994, two political party leaders from the opposition, Edwin Mtei, was then chairman of the opposition, Chama cha Demokrasia na Maendeleo, Chadema, and the Secretary General of the NCCR, Mageuzi Mabere Marando. They went to the court and said, we don't want the commission, National Electoral Commission, to run elections because it's appointed by the president, who happens to be also a chairman of one of the ruling party, one of the contenders. And the court said, appointment itself does not make someone partisan. If they are appointed by the president, not by the chairman of the ruling party, then that is how it should be. But if you are worried, or you have people that you suspect that they are partisan, then you point them out that so and so is a member of a political party, he is very partisan, we will remove that person. So that is how it remained up to date. They never went back to challenge individuals. So because every one of us is appointed in their own individual capacity. It's not, so in other words, I serve my term is 5 years. After that, I can be reappointed, not necessarily so. Now, once appointed, the president cannot remove you unless the constitution says the president cannot remove you unless it is proven that you have failed in your responsibility. And it has to be proven. So in other words, they can appoint you, but they cannot dismiss you unless there are very clear causes that you have violated the law. That's according to the constitution. So I'm not sure if I've answered your question.
You have. So here you have two systems that are working very differently in the ZEC and the NEC. The ZEC actually has members of parties,
yes,
in the commission. What would you say are the merits and possibly the demerits of having political party members within the commission?
When you have political parties in a commission, then it is difficult to operate, because they are there to protect the interests of their political parties. Now, sometimes it becomes difficult to make decisions. For us in the National Electoral Commission, we don't have that problem. So we don't really, for us, every political party is, for us, is like when you're doing a business, a customer. You know, so for us, a political party is a stakeholder, and every political party is a stakeholder. And we involve them. So close to election, we invite them to sit in ad hoc committees, which are always created before the elections. And so we make it a point to make sure that political parties are involved in consultations. It's not in the law, but we involve them anyway to build more trust. Now, so when the merits of including political parties are that, well, they are there. So they see what is happening. But the demerit is that does not add value to the electoral process, because you bring in partisanship. And when you bring in partisanship, particularly in the case of Zanzibar, I'm not supposed to speak for them, but when you have only, currently Tanzania has 17 registered political parties. So how many are you going to include? And also, I had the occasion also to observe elections in Mozambique. If you read the report of the Commonwealth report on the elections in Mozambique, one of the things they recommend is that you bring in a stalemate when you, sometimes it becomes difficult to make decisions, and you may have problems. And so they did recommend that it is better for the commission to be of professionals, to remove politics out of it. And I agree that it is better to remove the politics in the management of elections and encourage professionalism. And what we have done at the commission is to do exactly that. In 1995, from donors, from political parties, particularly the opposition, from other monitors, the University of Dar es Salaam, my colleagues, there was pressure on the commission to pick people who are not only civil servants. And that effort was done, but the results were disastrous. And the comment was that because the commission picked people who are not professional, so we returned back to the basics. The 2000 elections and 2005 elections were more professionally conducted, at least I can speak on the mainland. The Zanzibar, I'm not going to comment on that, but on the union elections, at least 2000. And particularly 2005 elections were more professionally conducted because we hired only civil servants to run the elections, teachers and the other people who are working. But we also introduced the stringent conditions in the management of elections to make it more professional. One, for example, we introduced the penalties. If you are running an election, whether as a presiding officer or as a returning officer, because for reasons best known to yourself, and it is proven in a court of law that you mismanaged the elections, then you can be jailed. So we introduced jail sentences for between a year and two, and a fine not less than 500,000 shillings, and or both a jail sentence and a fine. And if that, but then it has to be proven in a court of law, because we don't want it to act outside the law. So the court must decide that yes, this guy was managing an election, he or she mishandled the election, and maybe deliberately or whatever, but the elections were not credible because of this person. So then the court can say you can be jailed or you can get the fine or both of them. And if there must be a rerun, there is also an option. You have to pay part of the cost. If you don't have enough money, some of your properties can be auctioned. So these are stringent measures which we introduced at the commission to make sure that elections are professionally conducted. Now, in between, if, for example, a returning officer, if one of political parties comes and says, this presiding officer is partisan, and if there is evidence, we remove that person and we put another one in place. Remember, I told you earlier that by law, any councillor director by virtue of their office, during elections, they become returning officers or registration officers. But if someone comes and says, this officer is partisan, then we remove them and put someone else. And we did that in the 2005 election. Someone came and said, you know, actually the CUF in Tanga, for Tanga, the city of Tanga, they came, the opposition party, and said, this person, the returning officer there is partisan. She is an ardent supporter of the ruling party, CCM. And we said, do you have proof? And said, yes, we have a proof. This person is one of those who also sponsored the candidate, the CCM candidate of the municipality of Tanga. And we looked into the forms. We called this person and we said, how come you supported this person and you are not supposed to? Said, I have the right. If you look at the Election Act, it says that any voter can sponsor a political party member to become a candidate for a member of parliament, and that is true. But we said, we told her that yes, indeed, as a voter, that's one of your rights. That's what the law says. But you are not only an ordinary voter, you are a presiding officer. So you are supposed to treat every candidate, you must gain the trust of all the contenders. Now here is people who are complaining they cannot trust you. So sorry, so we removed that person. We put another one in place. So we did that in Tanga, and there was also complaint in another constituency in Magu, where this time an assistant returning officer, again the same, supporting candidates of the ruling party by signing their nomination forms. And we said, sorry, as a voter, it is your right, but not as a person who is, you know, managing the elections. So we also removed that assistant returning officer and put someone in office. So that is, in short, that is how we do, and that's how we want our elections to be professional, to follow the law to the letter.
In many countries, people feel that the election management body should be free from political pressures to fulfill its mandate.
Yes.
There are many ways to build independence.
Yes.
Would you describe some of the ways that have been used here to create greater independence for the NEC?
The Constitution. Again, the Constitution there is very clear. The Constitution says that the National Electoral Commission should not be bound to be pressured by any political party. So we think that is enough protection from the Constitution. I wish I had a copy here, I would read it, but unfortunately I don't think I have a copy. But yes, we get from the Constitution is very clear on that one, that the Commission, the National Electoral Commission, should not be pressured by any political party, and it's not bound. And so we use that one, that constitutional protection. But there are challenges. One of the challenges is funding. You know, funding can be a bit problematic because the commission does not have its own election fund. We get funding from the government. But we say it's done everywhere in the world. These elections are financed from taxpayers' money. And the custodian of the taxpayers' money is always the Ministry of Finance. So we always ask money from the Ministry of Finance. That can be a little bit challenging. And we have proposed to the government that maybe the government should establish an election fund so that come election year, there is always a fund. In other words, we are calling to the government, to our government and the other governments, particularly in what you call fragile states. We are calling them to invest in democracy. And investing in democracy means also to invest in elections. Always put aside money. You know that at the end of every 5 years you will have an election. So why not begin to put after the election, then the next year should begin preparing for the election. So come the election year, we'll have built enough coffers, enough funding for the election. So that is, the funding is a bit of a challenge. For our commission also, the commission does not have permanent staff. I told you that the only permanent staff is the director of election. The rest are civil servants. So if they are civil servants, that means you can invest, we have done so. You can invest in training the people, but you risk losing some of them. And we have had one of the newly appointed judges, for example, was our principal legal officer that was trained there for a number of years, a very competent lady. She was appointed to become a judge. What can we say? And we have had other cadres also. But there is a law which is a draft is in place, not yet passed by Parliament. We hope that maybe before the next elections, maybe it will be passed. If that is passed, then the National Electoral Commission will have powers to hire and fire its own staff. In other words, it will have a permanent staff. And that law also proposes to have presence up to the council level, which means we will have presence. In principle, the government has accepted. And already there is, if you go to any council in Tanzania today and ask, do you have an election officer? They will say yes. But ask that person what they are supposed to do, they still don't know. But we think things will clear up as soon as the legislation, the National Electoral Commissions Act is passed by the national legislature.
Now you mentioned proposals perhaps to set up a separate election fund.
Yes.
Would you describe in detail, a few more details, what this proposal would entail? What would be the characteristics of a fund specifically for
election? Well, this is only a proposal. So only that's one of the recommendations which, after the previous elections, which the Commission has made to the government. This fund, to me, because I'm talking about me and the ideas of an election fund. The idea of an election fund is that in every budget session, then the government should put aside money to run elections. Okay, so if you call it an election fund, it's a special fund that you put there. You don't use that money unless you have an election. So it's not a budget to run the commission, because always a commission, like any other department, should be run on what do you call them, current budget, current expenditure budget. But we're not talking about a current expenditure budget. We are talking about in every budget session, that the government should make sure, knowing that the election, every year they know exactly, in every election, the government knows exactly how much the commission is spent. So if you put aside money every fiscal year, okay, plus, a bit of inflation. Always, if you add up maybe inflation, our inflation rate is running currently around 9%. So if you put, say, 10%, meaning that by the next election, if you put that money, if you have the previous money plus 10% inflation rate, then you will come out with the amount of money that will be required to manage your next election. So you don't have to every time worry. And also when you have a by-election, you don't have to set aside, you know, to put aside some other issues, some other important, you know, aspect that you wanted to finance, so that you can finance a by-election. That's my conception of an election fund. Money which are put aside to a special fund, which not the government, not the commission, can use unless there is an election.
Now, elections are obviously quite an expensive proposition.
They are very expensive.
So are there any measures that have been debated on how to cut costs?
Yes, we have had proposals. One of them was to, for example, do away with the, you know, a number of polling stations that you have. We are spending at least about $7 per voter, which is very high. Very high. So one of the proposals was to cut down the number of polling stations. We looked at it. We did reduce a number of them. And what we have done is, for example, to do away with the idea of constructing temporary polling stations, which we used to do. So we no longer construct temporary polling stations. We use public buildings, schools, dispensaries, local government offices. So that's what we do. So we no longer construct temporary. And we also used to hire premises from private individuals. That was money also. So we have also done away with that. So if we use a public building, we don't have to pay money. But it has come at some cost, that some polling stations may be a bit far apart. What we do is to make sure that at least people should not walk more than 5 kilometers to a polling station. Because voter convenience is also important in a democracy. So we are concerned to cut the costs, but also to ensure that people are able to vote quite conveniently. So it's tricky to balance the two.
You also recently moved to a permanent voter register.
Correct.
Did that have any cost implications?
It has. It was very expensive to establish a permanent voters register because you have to buy, we used, for example, Polaroid cameras. No, I think they have abandoned. It's okay.
Go ahead. No.
So, yes, it was very expensive to establish a permanent national voters register because we had to buy Polaroid cameras, we had to buy Polaroid films, we had to train people, we took pictures, we had also to buy scanners for the OMRA forms, optical mark recognition, but also so to buy computers, to establish an IT center. So that is computers, consultants, very expensive. But at least now we have a database of people. It's proving to be also a challenge. We thought we would cut down the expenses. It's proving differently. Because now when we wanted to, the technology that we used appears to be obsolete. The people making the cameras, Polaroid cameras, are no longer making them. People, you know, making the films are no longer making them. So now people are going to digital cameras. And So, in other words, our expectations, we don't think we will save the money, taxpayers' money, as we had anticipated. But the good thing is that come any election, you don't have to register afresh because you already have a data bank that you can go to, so you can carry out the elections. So that is the advantage. So that advantage we have. Now, we think that when we have permanent presence in the districts, in the councils, then probably we will be able to move with the change in the technology. In that we will, if we have a presence there, someone located at the council level who will be able to liaise with the council people at the ward and village levels, then you put your investment there. Now it's a digital camera, a computer, and a little printer. Then you can save. So in the future, probably, at the moment, the savings are not as we had expected.
The registration process for
Yes.
2010, when do you begin this?
We have already started. We have already started. We have already updated the register. Actually, this week we are already putting advertisements, sports, radio sports, television sports, to ask people of Dar es Salaam. We have done it all over the country except Dar es Salaam and Zanzibar. So this week we are beginning to. We're going to have 1 week where we can register people in Dar es Salaam, people who have come of age since 2005, but also people who moved from other areas to Dar es Salaam. So we are finishing Dar es Salaam this week, and the next month we will go to Zanzibar. Zanzibar will be small because it's only a few people, not many. And then next year, we are starting afresh, beginning January again. We are beginning to put in place a mechanism to register people for the 2010 elections. So in other words, updating the register is part of that responsibility. We have done it already, but we are also going to do it next year, just before the 2010 elections.
I'd like to come back now to the questions of election management bodies.
Yes.
Transparency and the appearance of fairness are very important in
No, that is
elections.
correct.
So, would you describe the ways in which people have tried to maintain transparency in the NEC here?
In the NEC, I mentioned a little bit earlier that in the NEC, close to elections, we create ad hoc committees. And in each of these committees, we invite someone from the civil society, we invite someone from the government, and we invite someone from the political parties, both from the ruling and the opposition parties. So they are there. But also, as a permanent fixture, we put a recommendation, and the government accepted, and the law was changed, the Election Act, both the 1979 Local Government Election Act, number 4, and the 1995 Election Act number 1 were amended so that during the registration process, the opposition, actually not the opposition, all political parties who are registered can post someone at any station that is registering people so they can monitor the registration process. So that is one. And during elections, on the polling day, again, every candidate is allowed to put or to post a monitor, an election monitor. We call them candidate or party agents to monitor the election process. So they can sit there in the polling station during the voting day, and also in the counting and in the tallying centers. So in other words, they can monitor the whole election process. And in the polling day, there is a lot of transparency, because before voting commences, all people who are on the line, they are shown the ballot boxes. We use transparent boxes, but even that, we still have to show them that the box is empty before it is closed and seals put. And the party agents who are there in the polling station are allowed to record the number of the of the seals. Okay, and then voting commences. At the end of the process, counting takes place at the polling station. So there is no transferring of ballot boxes. Counting takes place there and then. And at the end of the process, every polling agent of the candidate or the party signs the result and gets a copy. So they get a copy. And a copy is also posted outside the polling station. So that it's not easy to really tamper with the results. Because a political party that is very keen, by the end of the day, really by midnight, they should know exactly where they stand. Because if they have posted everyone there, and if they have people who can monitor also the results from which are posted in every polling station, then and their party agents. So that is one way of making sure that there is transparency. But we also allow internal monitors. The University of Dar es Salaam, I told you earlier, they form always an organization called TEMCOM. They monitor elections. And we also invite international observers, like you and the others, to come and monitor. But also, before the commission makes any major decisions, which will involve changing the policy or the procedures, we talk to political parties, both at the national level. And when we, for example, when we go to the regions, to the districts, before we start, for example, the registration, we hold the meetings with the stakeholders, and these stakeholders are political parties at the regional level. So we talk to them. In other words, parties at the regional level, we talk to them. And they give us inputs which we consider in the process. So that is how we maintain transparency.
It seems like there are a number of issues on which the NEC liaises with political parties. Would you describe further what these issues are? Are parties involved in the creation of a code of conduct?
Yes, the code of conduct is voluntary in nature. It's not a statutory, and that is where the challenge is, because some parties argue that if it is voluntary, that means some people can be, free to transgress, to violate the code of conduct. But we think it is a useful instrument. In 1995, the commission tried and failed. In the 2000, it tried, it didn't quite succeed. In the 2005 elections, it succeeded. There was a code of conduct signed by most of the political parties, not all, but at least most of those who participated. And the elections ran a little bit smoother than in the previous elections. So it's not a legal requirement. In other words, the election law and the constitution does not tell you to do that. But in the to gain more trust. And to gain more trust and to add transparency to the way the commission conducts its activities, that it decided that it was important to sit with the political parties to negotiate an instrument which can be used by all political parties. But we think of some of the political parties recommended that once this instrument, this code of conduct is negotiated and agreed upon between the commission and the political parties and the government and signed, then it should be made statutory. So it's a recommendation from the political parties. We have picked a leaf and we have also made that recommendation to the government. We don't know what the outcome will become.
Is there also an effort on part of the NEC to encourage inter-party dialogue?
We think by bringing political parties together in when we have issues to discuss, that in itself encourages inter-party dialogue. Because before political parties, you know, the ruling party and the opposition could not sit down and talk. And that's why even in the very first attempt of NEC in 1994 to make the political parties sit together and negotiate and a code of conduct collapsed. You know, but slowly the political parties come together and they like it to come together with us, with the National Electoral Commission to discuss on important issues regarding the elections. So it's not a legal requirement, but we think as a measure of building more trust and also transparency, it's important.
I'd like to ask you briefly about the registration process. What would you say are the greatest challenges of conducting registration in Tanzania?
Tanzania is a big country. A big, big country. Tanzania is like if you combine the state of California, Nevada, and I think maybe New Mexico together. So that is Tanzania. So it's a big country. So it's a challenge. How do you get all these people there? Already we have 17 million people in the permanent national voters register already. Population now is close to 40 million. So you see, that's the vastness of the country. But also, as I mentioned earlier, challenges, changing technology, that's a big challenge to us because we don't make the technology, we buy it. And training people, getting people used to the new technology, that is a challenge. But probably the most challenge, which I think in the future can be averted, if we form a United States of Africa, like you have United States of America, that can change. Because that challenge now is how can you, the law says only Tanzanians can be registered. Yet we are bordering Congo, and with the problems in Congo, a lot of refugees in Tanzania, western part of Tanzania, refugees from Burundi, problems. We also border Rwanda, problems. We border Uganda, we had problems, but we also, if you go to the border area, Masaka, for example, the people there, they are very close to the Tanzanians. You cannot make a difference. You go to Kenya, northern east part of Tanzania, on Lake Victoria, Musoma. You have the Luos in Kenya, you have the Luos in Tanzania. You have the Kuria, actually they have Kuria Mara in Kenya. They're the same people. Now, again, Serengeti, Arusha, the Maasai. Maasai in Kenya, Maasai in Tanzania. The Kamba people on the, you know, and also on the coast. How do you differentiate between a person who is from Mombasa and someone in Tanga? These are the same groups. Malawi, Mozambique, Zambia. So that is the biggest challenge. Who is a Tanzanian in those areas? When you have people who have relatives on the other side of the border, intermarriages, people, others feeling on the, you know, living on the other side of the border. They are the same people. And some of those who would like to have a piece of paper which identifies them with Tanzania. So that is the biggest challenge. And probably when the government now introduces the national IDs, probably. But I think the best way out is to remove the borders.
And how do you register those who have no identification documents?
Yes, how do you do that? We always, I told you earlier, we invite the political parties to have their presence there. But also, we invite the people who live there. Government people, particularly village executive officers, ward executive officers, to come, and the citizens. So we first we train the registration clerks. We use standard questions which are asked by the immigration. So we had to get the people from the immigration to help us to determine who is a Tanzanian. You know, so we use those standard procedures to identify a Tanzanian from the immigration. So we train our people. But the most important is that once we register people, we have recorded the names, we create a temporary register, and then we send back the names up to the ward level, and we display the temporary register for 7 days, and invite people to come and look at the register. People who are resident in those areas, political parties, civil society, and registered voters themselves. If they pick a person who they think is not a Tanzanian, then they tell us and we can remove their names. So that is a challenge, but that's how we go about it, by involving civil society, involving the people from the immigration, involving local government, grassroots officials, and the political parties themselves.
Now, I know you're pressed for time, so I
yes,
can
I'm,
ask...
Yes, I'm being pressed for time, yes.
I'll ask maybe one or two quick questions, if that's
two
okay.
Two quick questions.
Two quick questions, okay. One question is, how do you go about training your electoral staff? What are the methods that you use?
What are the methods we use? We prepare, we labor to prepare materials. We call them guidelines. Guidelines for presiding officers or registration clerks. Guidelines for political parties. And the guidelines for people who are going to actually conduct the elections, the people at the polling station. So we prepare at the national level. We first prepare these guidelines. And then once we prepare these guidelines, we hold the trainers of trainers courses, TOTs, for the first for the registration clerks. For the registration process, and then the returning officers for the actual, carrying out of the election process itself. And then we send teams also, people from the national headquarters, the commission headquarters, we send them to the regions to carry out also training of trainers, in addition to the one which we had trained the returning officers or the registration clerks. So you also carry out now another TOT there. And then those will now involve people up to the ward level. And now the people at the ward level will now train the rest.
Okay, in conclusion, I'd like to ask you, Is there an innovation that you've seen here that you think domestic authorities developed and was very successful and you think could be adapted or adopted elsewhere?
What we adopted? Yes, a number of things. First, for example, when the commission was introduced, the elections were being run by the Speaker's office, and also the district commissioners were actually the returning officers. But the district commissioner is a political person, has two hats, you know, and from the ruling party. So we said the more permanent people are people in the council. So we moved to the council. So that's why we make the returning officers. But we think of creating offices. But also making sure that elections are witnessed by political parties and the candidates. Counting immediately after the results, after you finish the process, and announcing the results, and everyone who is inside there, the party agent or candidate agent, whoever is there getting a copy of the results, and the results posted outside the polling station, so that the media can pick. Then it's not easy to cheat. Because you know, everyone will know if the results are out there, and you have an attentive media, then you know, it will be covered. So it won't be easy to cheat. That is some of the innovations which we have introduced. But also introducing conditions for attempting to professionalize election management, making sure that whoever is carrying out the election, is managing the election, be it a commissioner like myself, or the chairman, or the director of election, or the other officials at the commission headquarters, or the presiding officers, or the returning officers, everyone, to introduce penalties, possibilities of being prosecuted. We think that is very important because it makes then the process professional. You have to follow the law. If you go against the law, you stand to be prosecuted. And if you are found, if the court, you know, believes that you are guilty, you get punished. And the penalties are stipulated in the Election Act. We think this is an innovation which others can emulate and probably avoid problems which have resulted, for example, in Kenya or Zimbabwe.
I want to thank you very much for your time, Professor Chaliga.
Thank you.